May it please the court. This case is about the burden of proof that the government must bear when it restricts a citizen's speech. The U.S. Supreme Court has held in numerous cases that where a regulation affects citizen speech, the government must demonstrate by evidence the existence of a real, non-speculative harm it is seeking to prevent. It must show that the proposed speech restrictions are necessary to address that harm and will do so directly. And it must show that the speech restrictions are no more extensive than necessary to address the harm the government has asserted.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the statute that that's been invoked against your client, is that broad enough to include what they do by way of their communications on the internet? Or is there a difference between that and the conduct where they use these real estate advisors who engage the public?
Your Honor, the
distinction, because one of them seems to me to be in the area of speech, but the other one may be more in the area of conduct.
Your Honor, the Real Estate Commission has not distinguished between the information provided on the website and the information provided by the real estate by the rental advisors. The record shows that the information provided on the website is neither false nor misleading, nor is it likely to lead to any harm. Similarly, the record shows no evidence whatsoever that any of the information being provided by the rental advisors is either false or misleading or likely to result in any harm.
And is that the test, for instance, in regulation of other professions? Do we look at individual speech and determine whether it's false or misleading? So if somebody wanted to give advice about the law, for instance, would that be okay as long as that particular instance was accurate?
Well,
or
Your
is
Honor,
that subject to regulation?
The question would be whether the government meets its burden of proof. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has held in numerous cases that there are legitimate interests for the government to serve in regulating professions, even where those professions might involve speech. The question is whether the specific regulation at issue has been appropriately tailored to address.
Well, but you say to determine that we have to look at a particular item of speech and decide if it's false, as opposed to the general issue of is there a danger from false statements and false advertising, and is there a danger presented in the regulation of, say, the real estate market that would justify requiring broker exams and training and so forth, just like in law or in other professions. And you don't look at each particular piece of information that a doctor gives out or a non-doctor gives out in the medical field. We say because of the risks and dangers, we can regulate the practice of medicine. That would be true in other professions too. Certainly there's a limit to how far that goes, but I've never seen a case that said you have to look at each particular statement made by a non-physician and decide whether it's accurate in deciding that it's inappropriate.
So, Your Honor, I believe the question that you're posing addresses creating a prophylactic rule designed to prevent a specific harm.
And I'd like you to address that, why this is an inappropriate prophylactic rule as opposed to what I see you're saying we do is not look at that, but look at each individual website or statement and decide if that was accurate or inaccurate. Seems like the law steps back a bit and looks at can we regulate it so we avoid the danger of having these inaccuracies.
So where the government wants to impose a prophylactic rule of the sort at issue in this case, the question is, does it go beyond the harms that the government has asserted that it needs to address to sweep in protected speech? In this case, because the vast majority of the speech taking place by Kansas City Premier Apartments has been conceded to be truthful and harmless, it's clear that the prophylactic rule at issue in this case does sweep in a wide range of protected speech, speech that must be given a wide berth if the freedom of speech secured both by the First Amendment and by Article 1, Section 8 of the Missouri Constitution are to be respected. And again, Your Honor, the court's primary responsibility, as has been set out in a number of U.S. Supreme Court cases, is to ensure the freedom of its citizens.
Can I interrupt you? Because I think you're missing Judge Stiff's point. It is. She's saying it isn't whether your client's information is true and correct. It's whether similar type information that was not true and correct could cause harm to consumers, and that the rules govern the potential of harm to avoid it rather than looking at your individual clients. Can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. Where the government is seeking to impose a prophylactic rule, it has the opportunity to put on evidence demonstrating why that prophylactic rule, which might restrict speech, is necessary.
Doesn't the state have an interest in determining who, in other words, what the qualifications of people are who deal with the public on certain matters, in this case, real estate? So the police power of the state is invoked to say that in order for you to engage in the business of being involved with real estate transactions, you as an individual must pass a test. I mean, the government can do that, can't it?
Your Honor, again, the general licensing scheme is not being challenged in this case. If the government wants to license a profession, it has the opportunity to demonstrate why that profession should be licensed.
Well, you don't challenge the fact that the state can license real estate agents and brokers, do you?
No, we are not challenging that in this case.
Okay. So you're not challenging. What I'm really focused on are these advisors or whatever they are. Isn't that where your case gets the weakest, because these are people who are not licensed or given permission by the state to engage in the kinds of activities that they are engaged in?
I disagree that it's the weak part of the case, Your Honor, because in fact the role, the responsibility of the government, because these rental advisors are engaging in speech, the government bears the burden of demonstrating the harm it seeks to prevent by restricting that speech, and it must put on evidence, and the government did not do that.
So what you're saying is that the state must produce evidence in order to regulate the business of real estate agents?
Insofar as the regulation of real estate agents restricts truthful, harmless speech, yes. The question is not...
So that any regulation of real estate agents... In any case, the state has to put on proof that an unregistered agent is distributing inaccurate information or that his or her activities are harmful to the public.
In any regulation, regardless of whether it's an occupational licensing regulation or some other form of regulation, if the regulation restricts a citizen's freedom of speech, as the regulation in this case does, the government must demonstrate...
But every regulation of an occupation, and by the way, as a matter of personal preference, I think that occupational licensing is a restriction that is probably something that sounds almost un-American, but we have lots of regulated occupations. Hairdressers and barbers and real estate agents and lawyers, dare I mention them, doctors, nurses. So all of these individual categories of persons are having their speech activities, the speech activities of a certain kind, along with the conduct, is being restricted by virtue of the fact that in order to engage in this conduct, which includes speech, you have to get permission from the state, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you're not challenging that.
No, we are not challenging that.
How would you distinguish, instead of, if they were, it may seem pretty simple that people could give advice on renting apartments, but how would you distinguish that from somebody, instead of a rental advisor, was a financial advisor, and they hadn't passed any tests required for the appropriate licenses to sell different financial products? How's your case distinguishable from those?
Well, again, Your Honor, there have been challenges.
Again, we're talking about potential harm.
There have been challenges to the provision of financial advice, and in those cases, the government was required to demonstrate what is the harm that is concerning the government here. Is the speech restriction appropriately tailored to address that harm, and is it any more extensive than necessary?
But that's a very general restriction, general regulation, and yet you're saying they have to, in each case, show specifically where the harm was, and I'm not aware of anything that says you have to prove harm in an individual case in order to generally regulate. Otherwise, there's no point in having a general regulation.
Your Honor, there's the difference between the prophylactic rule and the application of the rule.
Well, if you're acting as a real estate agent, which I know is a different issue, then the rule applies. And it's not, were you a good or bad real estate agent or rental agent?
The cases to which I would refer, Your Honor, Edenfield is of particular importance, where the U.S. Supreme Court struck down regulations that were put on accountants in Florida because the speech restrictions were not tailored to address the harm the government was asserting. Thomas versus
Collins.
So tell
me where in the statute, if the regulations go are broader in the statute than they need to be. Not your particular case, but if you're saying the statute is too broad and it's regulation of real estate brokers, but I understand that's not what you're doing here.
Your Honor, the court has the option of narrowing the construction of the challenged provisions in this case so that they no longer pose a constitutional problem. The court has the option, and this is something that the United States Supreme Court has done in other cases, where they recognize that a statute swept in speech that ought to be protected, particularly truthful and harmless speech. It endorsed the narrowing constructions on these statutes so that it would no longer reach the speech that must be preserved, while it also preserved the statute at issue in those cases. Courts have that authority. They can also handle as-applied challenges where they say, in this specific circumstance, this gets to the question of if an individual practitioner is challenging a statute, in this particular circumstance, the First Amendment permits or does not permit this language.
If a real estate agent gives inaccurate information to a prospective tenant or buyer tenant, there's consequences, there's sanctions, the license can be penalized. How is a consumer protected when one of these rental advisors gives inaccurate or false information? Where is the penalty there to protect the public?
It's difficult to answer your question, Your Honor. As an initial matter, I would say that the state has fraud statutes that protect anyone who has been given fraudulent information. But the secondary problem with this is that the government did not explain what harms it is actually trying to avoid. It did not present any evidence of the harms it's trying to avoid with these speech restrictions.
Wasn't that up to the legislature in passing the legislation?
No, Your Honor. The United States Supreme Court has said that the government must put on evidence. In all of these cases where the Supreme Court has addressed this question.
So every time there's an unauthorized practice of law case, we have to put on evidence of the specific harm from the specific advice given by the person practicing law without a license?
Your Honor, once evidence has been presented on a particular issue and has been passed on by the court, that would then be precedent upon which the court could rely. So, for example, in regards to regulation of the legal profession, the courts have made clear that there is a compelling interest in requiring the licensing of attorneys. That becomes precedent that the courts can rely on in the future if anyone chooses to raise another challenge. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel with each case.
Bates versus Arizona or the RMJ case, which Judge Blackmore argued.
So I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't.
It's not unlimited or unrestrained, given Bates versus Arizona and the RMJ case, which Judge Blackmore argued.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the RMJ case is a perfect example in which the Missouri Supreme Court had said that there was no problem with a certain restriction on attorney speech. And the United States Supreme Court said that there had been no evidence presented of the harm that the speech restriction was intended to avoid, and so it struck down the discipline of that attorney.
But that's a speech of a nature where you're advertising the service or product. But in this case, you've got a rental advisor who's specifically talking to an individual person. It seems to me that those are two different kinds of, quote, speech.
They are distinct, Your Honor. Again, the burden of proof in this case was for the government to show what harm are they seeking to avoid by preventing these rental advisors from communicating in the way that they're being restricted. The government offered no evidence.
What you're doing is you're saying that a person has to meet a certain set of entry requirements in order to be able to talk to members of the public in that capacity and give them advice about real estate transactions. Now, you and I may agree that that's a lot of hooey, but doesn't the state have a right to do that?
If the state chooses to do that, it
well,
must, the government must.
Do that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Our state has clearly chosen to do that.
So in a circumstance where the state has chosen to do that, the government's responsibility is to.
There's no question that that this particular occupational licensing statute was done for the benefit of the public, or been in the name of the public, but also was a huge benefit to people in the real estate business.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Now, is one of those an improper purpose?
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree that it is an improper purpose for the government to create a regulation to protect a specific industry.
Now we're on to something, but I think we're way beyond your case.
Can we require teacher certification, or do we need to let just anybody stand up and say whatever they want to say and then prove it was inaccurate? I'm not clear where your argument is going. If we were accepted as your argument today, it doesn't seem to have any limit.
So, Your Honor, I think you raise an interesting point with the teaching question. In fact, this point has been raised recently in Virginia, where the state required licensure to be a yoga instructor.
So that is your argument. You can't require certification of teachers.
That is not my argument, Your Honor. The government can propose these restrictions. It can impose these restrictions. But if it is challenged because it restricts speech, the government will then have to demonstrate why the restriction is necessary. So yes, the government can pass laws requiring licensure for teachers. If a teacher stands up and says, I don't think I should have to get a license, the government will then have to show in court with evidence, and the U.S. Supreme Court has shown that mere assertions are not sufficient. You have to actually show evidence. They've called for studies. They've called for anecdotal evidence about the harms that are feared.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. This is not a case about freedom of speech. This is a case about business. Specifically, the business of practicing real estate. This is a case about the power of the legislature to determine that the protection of the public requires that certain skilled professions be carried out only by people who have the education, the qualification, and the accountability.
Let me ask you something just in reference to the part of this that's the stuff that's on the internet, the information that's available through this company. If we just slice that off from the rental advisors, can the Real Estate Commission regulate information that's put on the internet by a company that wants to put out information about real estate listing?
It would depend on whether the structure of the information provided or the structure of the organization that was providing the information was such that it met one of the criteria for the definition of the practice of real estate. For instance, the statute says that it is the practice of real estate to assist or direct in the procurement of prospects in return for compensation or valuable consideration. One of the key factors in this case is that KCPA's business is very much oriented to the procurement of prospects. KCPA gets paid when they produce a prospect.
Paid by the landlord.
Paid by the individual property owner. KCPA is not paid to share information. KCPA is paid to procure prospects, and they get paid when that happens.
So when they get a prospect from the, say, from their internet advertising,
that's correct.
And they refer that prospect to a landowner, and to a property owner, and the property owner leases, then they get
yes.
some money.
They get paid.
Referral.
They get paid when the tenant gives the landlord a card notifying the landlord that he or she was referred to the landlord through the services of KCPA.
So if this real estate or if this company provided the information on an internet site, and the only way that they made money was by selling ads for the website, would you have a problem with that type of website?
We have a statute that says that advertising is exempt if it is incidental to the company's major business. There have been cases elsewhere in the country where that incidental limitation has been challenged, and I think that we would have a very different and more difficult case if all the company did was sell advertising space on its website and that was all they did. Another comparable thing would be the for rent magazines that you see in the supermarkets. Technically, they could be considered illegal advertising because the advertising they provide is not incidental to their business. It's their primary business.
But it's giving advice and counseling, and referring back to what Judge Russell said, which is a very good point, is the point about licensing. When you give someone a license, there's something to lose. So if someone has to take a test and get a license, there's something to lose if they don't follow the regulations or and as opposed to taking up a fraud case or trying to prosecute criminally, you have something to lose if you have a license, and therefore you can police the conduct, especially when you're talking about advice being given versus information on the internet.
Chapter 339 is under Title 22, the caption of which is Occupations and Professions. This is about the business of real estate, and as we pointed out at length in our brief, the practice of regulating gives the state three distinct advantages. Number one, it gives an opportunity for initial qualification, both education and character. Number two, licensed realtors are required to undergo continuing education, just as lawyers are. And number three, they are accountable through a disciplinary system, none of which you have when you have an unlicensed person.
And they don't have to, when the legislature passes unauthorized practice of law, the statute of might be a Class D misdemeanor, they don't have to put reasons. They just pass and say, you can't practice law in an unauthorized practice. They don't have to give reasons of why they're doing it when they issue, when they pass laws or regulations. They just do it. That's within their prerogative.
Now, when the legislature has passed laws regulating over 40 professions in Missouri, and real estate agents are regulated in every one of the 50 states of the country, and there is no court anywhere in the country that has ever held that it is a violation of the free speech rights of unlicensed persons to require that one hold a professional license in order to engage in conduct, including speech, which is part of the practice of a profession.
Opposing counsel says you have an obligation in this case to come forward with evidence to support that point, that there has to be a test case where a court finds there's a compelling state interest in such regulation in each area.
This court has held that there is a state interest originally with the Gilbert case, which was adopted by this court in the Sherna case and in Miller nationwide, that there is a compelling state interest in the protection of the public from fraud and incompetency. Mr. Rowland talks over and over about fraud, but incompetency is also a factor. The legislature has a legitimate interest in assuring that people who engage in the brokerage of real estate transactions understand the law of real estate and understand the business.
Let me understand your argument about just this web-based business.
Yes.
Take off the rental advisors. Okay. This is an advertising medium, and the. As I understand it, this website and its other use of social media, but basically this information service provides advertisements that are posted on it by property owners. They don't edit it. They just say, here's what the property owner says. And if I go to that website as a prospective tenant, it will offer me $100 in something. If I tell the property owner that I got the information from this website, from this advertisement, what's wrong with that?
There are a number of websites that operate on this basis, but KCPA is the only service against which the MREC has taken formal action. And I think part of the reason for that is that it is so much more than a website. I don't know the answer to your question. If it was just a website, if all they were doing selling advertising, would the MREC still have a problem with that? That hasn't been determined by the MREC.
It really goes, in this case, to the scope of the injunction. Because the circuit court enjoined the whole deal. The part I just described, plus the rental advisors, the whole business operation of KCPA. So my question is, really getting to the question of whether that injunction, even if you're entitled to the one as to the one-on-one contact, is too broad because it covers something that strikes me as being simply advertising, and advertising that's paid for by the person listing the property in a particular way because it's advertising based upon the results of the advertising.
The injunction focused carefully on the economic aspects of this business. The only two specific terms of the injunction had to do with the fact that KCPA could not enter into contracts to be paid for procurement of tenants. The other specific provision was that KCPA could not pay the $100 bonus or $100 incentive to tenants who are referred because that is a practice that is prohibited to
real
estate.
It did not enjoin a website then?
Pardon me?
It did not enjoin a website.
No, it did not specifically enjoin that. And I think
KCPA. You just said you couldn't make any money off it.
I think what the court focused on.
You can speak all you want to, but you can't speak money changes hands.
Well, the court very much was focused on the business of real estate. This is a case about the compensation. As has been pointed out, the statute does not regulate activity for which there's not compensation. And as the Supreme Court of the United States made clear in FCC Communications versus Beach, the state can set priorities and determine what aspects of an area it's going to regulate. And the decision to regulate only commerce, only the practice of a particular profession, as opposed to any activity in the area, is a legitimate decision for the legislature to make.
Well, if that kind of information was provided in the newspaper and the business paid the cost up front to place these ads or this information in a newspaper, that wouldn't be regulated, would it?
No, there's a specific exception that would clearly cover the newspaper where it's incidental to its business. I do think we would have a tougher case if you had a website that did nothing but provide advertising and was paid for the service of advertising rather than paid for the procurement of tenants.
So your problem here is the economic model, how the payment is set up in addition to the rental advisors, and is that the distinctions, and that's why you're pursuing action against this company?
Our problem is that this company is operating in what is essentially a mirror image of a conventional real estate agency focusing on rentals, with the sole exception that they don't have a physical office. In every other aspect, they are doing what real estate agencies do. They are competing with real estate agencies, and they are competing at an unfair advantage because they can do things like pay incentives that a licensed real estate agent wouldn't be able to do.
If they had a broker on staff, would you have a problem with that?
If they had a broker on staff, or if they had a relationship with a broker such that the broker was engaging in actual supervision and the people who were doing this work were licensed as salespersons and the company was licensed as an association. That is a solution that they could have pursued. It's important to point out that KCPA's unlicensed statute is not by nature. KCPA is unlicensed by choice. 4 years ago, they received the cease and desist letter and they initiated this litigation. In the 4 years that have elapsed since then, they could have had their broker's licenses by now. They have engaged in 4 years of litigation in order to avoid 72 hours of education. They have spent more time attempting to avoid the requirement of being licensed than it would have taken them to qualify for licensure in the first place.
But this is a choice. The problem is these rental advisors, they don't have to pay them anything unless they do something. So, I mean, they're essentially independent contractors.
They are.
And what they're avoiding is having to have each one of those rental advisors, who I guess might just be people sitting around their houses, and an occasional phone call or something, they avoid having to have them licensed as real estate salespeople.
Now, each one would not have to be licensed. The law provides that the principals of the company would have to be licensed. However, as our expert testified, it is possible to have unlicensed persons performing some of these kind of tasks if that person is supervised. The key to supervision is that there's a chain of accountability. If you have, it's just like lawyers and paralegals. We can't discipline paralegals, but if a paralegal commits misconduct under the supervision of a lawyer, we have standards for determining whether, under what circumstances the lawyer is vicariously responsible for the actions of the paralegal under his or her supervision. And we can, under some circumstances, if it's egregious enough, discipline the lawyer. There is no accountability to anyone with KCPA. There is no remedy for a consumer who would be aggrieved by something KCPA does other than to retain counsel and sue and hope that there are assets at the end of the trail that they could reach, or to seek to file criminal charges, which isn't in the consumer's control. So those are important factors that are missing when you have an unlicensed agency like KCPA rendering these services. And this is why the injunction that was entered by the court below was carefully tailored to focus on the economic aspects of the business of real estate. It is not overbroad. It does not address questions of speech. Rather, it focuses on the essential business, which is a legitimate interest of the state to regulate practice of real estate.
Does the business take on advertising of places for rent in Kansas?
Yes, it both Kansas and Missouri. It has continued to engage it's our understanding that it has continued to practice with regard to Kansas in the same way that it was before, but has not been accepting the fees or offering the rebate in Missouri since the injunction was entered.
And is there anything pending in Kansas with respect to this business?
Not that I know of. No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do I have?
Yes, you do.
May it please the court, for all of opposing counsel's discussion about harm, there is nothing in the record about what harm they think that this information is going to cause. There is nothing in the record indicating that any identifiable person has been harmed. Their own expert witness said the kind of information that Kansas City Premier Apartments provides is not likely to cause harm.
They argue that there are prior cases that address the harm caused by a failure to regulate the real estate industry, which you've said should be precedent that could be relied upon by the court.
Your Honor, if those cases had addressed this question of a constitutional issue, is it constitutional for the government to impose this kind of a regulation, that might actually be the case if they had put some evidence on to support that. That's not what the cases that opposing counsel has cited stand for. In fact, where the first assertion came that the real estate licensing was addressed to the problems of fraud and incompetence, it was a contract dispute. And the court was trying to decide what standard do we apply? Is this a revenue statute, or is it an exercise of the police power? That's how it came up. And later decisions by this court simply recycled that reasoning. They never looked at actual demonstrations of harm being concerned. Along those lines, Your Honor, opposing counsel misstated. The United States Supreme Court has struck down at least three licensing schemes because they violated the First Amendment. The first is Riley versus National Federation for the Blind. The government had imposed restrictions on charitable solicitation. The U.S. Supreme Court said, you have not demonstrated a sufficient harm in this case. This licensing scheme is unconstitutional. Similarly, in Thomas versus Collins, Texas had a licensing scheme for labor union organizers. The United States Supreme Court in that case, over Texas's objection that this was simply a form of regulation similar to regulating, they specifically mentioned real estate brokers, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down that restriction as a violation of the First Amendment. And thirdly, Grosjean versus American Press Company, Louisiana, had tried to impose restrictions on newspapers that were advertising. They said you have to have a license in order to provide this advertising. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down that restriction as a violation of the First Amendment. So, Your Honors, with my remaining time, I'd like to point out that this distinction between a business where incidental, where the advertising of real estate is incidental versus one where it's not is unconstitutional as a special law as established by Pettit versus Field. That case is directly on point, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under submission.